Welcome to tonight's board meeting. Tuesday, May 20th. We are going to report out from closed teeth 2014. And I'll second that. So we have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Questenberry. And are there any, yes, are there any changes or deletions to the minutes? Okay. Then we'll second, all in favor of accepting the minutes as printed? Aye. Okay. All right. Great. Okay. We would, do we have an abstention on the May 13th? Do we have an absence or? Yeah, yes. Okay, that's right. Okay, we've got that straight. Okay, we're good on that. All right, I don't see our student representatives to the board tonight. It's getting late in the year, and I'm sure they're busy with their activities and preparing maybe even for final exams this early. Who knows, right? We are now at the point of the evening. Why so many folks are here is the acknowledgement of retirees.
Thank you very much. I'm here to acknowledge our retirees, this wonderful group of people that we have here behind me. So what I'm going to do is if I could ask the board to come up front, and then Mr. Robinette's going to be at the end, and he's going to hand certificates to each one of our retirees as I read their names. And as I read the department or the school in which they worked. We are recognizing 36 employees tonight with a total combined number of service years of 865 years. So I'm going to read the names of each one of these employees, and then what I'd like, if employees, if you wouldn't mind just going over here from from Dr. Prater all the way over to Mr. Robinette, and he will hand you a gift certificate. And then afterwards, we have a beautiful presentation slideshow for you, and then also some dessert for you for a reception. So Dennis Ambling, Grounds Department. Patty Bailey, C.L. Smith Elementary. Diana Brown, Pacheco Elementary School. Bev Brin, Los Ranchos Elementary School. Ella Burke, Monarch Grove Elementary School. Carol Colley, C.L. Smith Elementary School. Alita Chafin, Monarch Grove Elementary. Carol Camo, Baywood Elementary School. Colby Kroetzer, Los Osos Middle School. Janet Cunningham, Food Services. Steve Dennis, Grounds Department. Sandra Dexter, Baywood Elementary School. Mary Lou Gooden, Los Ranchos Elementary School. Jeff Guy, Buildings, Grounds, and Transportation. Yeah. Kathy Hamrick, Student Support Services. Robin Hayward, Information Services. Karen Kinder, Transportation Department. Mike Law, San Luis Obispo High School. Rick Manderscheid, Maintenance Department. Jan Neiswanger from Los Osos Middle School. Glenn Sue Sanders, Baywood Elementary School. Bev Schalwitz, Sinsheimer Elementary School. Matsu S. from Hawthorne Elementary School. Okay. Bruce Tadone, San Luis Obispo High School. Relda Thomas, Laguna Middle School. Kimberly Tice Jensen from Pacific Beach High School. Joanne Ward, Pacheco Elementary School. Kim Zerbe, Sinsheimer Elementary School. And Kathy Zodovich, Instructional Services. And I would like to thank Sharon Haupt for all the books that she put together. She put together books on behalf of the retirees that are in the back corner. And each one of the retirees is having a book that's dedicated in their honor that will go to either one of the elementary schools or to the departments that they have chosen. And before we go and have a reception, I'd like to really thank Jen O'Hagan, who has taken all the photos that Debbie Juergens collected from each of our retirees and put it together in a special video for them. So we would like to show a tribute to our retirees at this point in time.
And we will move to item 6.01, which is correspondence. And at the moment, I don't see any particular correspondence. So we will move to item 6.02, which is public comment. Now, if you are going to speak to some issues on the LCAP, you can wait until that time. And that's a public hearing, and that's item 10.01. It's the second reading of the LCAP. Or if you choose to speak now, this is a good time. It's 3 minutes per speaker, and we're allotting a total of 20 minutes time. So we do have some requests to address the board. And Mrs. Sheffer is going to read them, and if you want to come forward now, it's fine. But if you want to wait until we talk discuss the LCAP, that's also fine.
So as Mr. Quisenberry said, I'm going to go ahead and call some names, and just please let me know if you prefer to wait or if you'd like to come up now, approach the podium. Anna Mullen, I'm sorry.
Hello, my name is Anna Mullen. I'm currently a senior at San Luis Obispo High School, and I will be attending the University of Oklahoma next year, where I will be studying mechanical engineering. I just wanted to thank you all for the amazing 4 years and share how the opportunities offered at San Luis Obispo High School has impacted my life. My freshman year, I decided to sign up for Mr. Fay's basic welding class out of curiosity. Taking this class was the best decision I've made in high school because I found a useful, enjoyable skill that sparked my interest. Sophomore year, I signed up to do the Skills USA competition for oxyacetylene welding, thanks to the nagging persistence of the fabulous Mr. Fay. That year, I made it to state but didn't place. However, I tried again my junior year and got second in the state for TIG welding. This exciting experience led me to try auto my senior year. With the outstanding dedication of Mr. Lemkuhl, I was able to learn enough in one school year to place fourth at the Skills USA State Competition for Automotive Service Technology and third in Southern California at the Ford AAA Troubleshooting Competition. Now I am ending my senior year taking the auto internship class fifth and sixth period, where I work with techs at Alfano Motor Cars. I am so fortunate to have attended a school with such great support for technical classes. Not only are the shops bustling with nice machines, but we are able to go to competitions outside of the county. Having these opportunities when so many schools are cutting shop classes really showed as I talked with college admissions, and they shared their amazement that I could do all this at a public high school. But it's not just colleges that are interested in these skills. I've been approached for potential jobs from respectable companies such as Ford and PG&E. However, having the right facilities isn't the only ingredient necessary for such an outstanding program as ours. The teachers are the heart of it all. Their dedication and enthusiasm motivates kids to learn skills that really help prepare us for further education and careers. My favorite class right now is physics, because I can see how relevant it is through auto class, when I can see how it works in real applicable ways. My main point is to please keep supporting these programs and teachers so future students can have as great of a high school experience as I could. Thank you.
Thank you.
Megan Healy. Sure. Josh Dorman. Abigail Dorman. And Julie Dorman.
I'm here to speak on the issue of the current issue of counseling in this school district. My name is Josh Dorman, and I missed almost 2 years of school with a chronic illness during my time at middle school and during my freshman year at high school. My family and I could not have gone through those years without the support, patience, and understanding of the counseling departments at Laguna Middle School and at SLO High. Every student needs and deserves time and a relationship with their counselor. This is only possible if the counselor has a reasonable...
My brother, I too got sick. And my counselor took the time and energy to make sure that my eighth grade year would be successful for me. She helped me through tough times and emotional times, and I am so grateful for her. I know that a lot of kids go through the same things that I go through when they miss school, when they have family problems, and getting to talk to a counselor is the greatest help, and I am so appreciative for my counselors, as I know that many kids are. I know that high school is going to be challenging academically and socially, and I hope that my counselors will be very supportive of me and will be there for me. I realize that budgets are tight, but we need our counselors. Social and emotional guidance is important for kids, especially going through high school. This is a time where kids are deciding on their careers and their futures. We need this guidance. Please help make sure that there are counselors that have enough time and energy to help us. They have helped me extremely, and they have influenced me on making my decisions for the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Abigail.
Hi, I'm Julie Dorman, better known as Josh and Abby's mom. And I must tell you, their counselors worked tirelessly and creatively to help our family during a tremendously challenging time, and they still do. They are still there for us. Every student deserves to develop a relationship and a rapport with their counselor. That cannot be done if the counseling department is cut back and the counselors have too much on their plates. Based on my experience growing up, as well as with my family, good counseling can open the door to opportunity and to hope for students. And without it, kids can get lost, miss out on opportunities, or shut down altogether. We must not underestimate the value of the counseling department. Please recognize the importance of having a strong, well-staffed counseling department. It's critical academically, socially, and emotionally for our students. I also wanted to share one more issue with the board, and that's about transportation or lack thereof to the high school. We all understand that tough cuts had to take place, but cutting all busing to the high school without a backup plan with city buses put a lot of pressure on parents, as well as put a lot of extra cars on our city streets, and is detrimental to the environment. And I would like the school district to reconsider putting some busing back in the community for our kids. Or at the very least, please work with the city transportation department and find a way to get our kids back on the bus. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Buffy Anderson.
I'm going to wait for the L.
Okay. Rose Fahey.
You don't want to say anymore?
Yes. I was able to get most of it.
Hello, my name is Rose Juhas Fahey, and I am a middle school math teacher in the district. Is this better? Okay. I am here in support of the two temporary 0.5 math TOSA instructional coach positions that have been requested in the LCAP for next school year. My colleague, Debbie Heck, and I were asked in January to research, analyze, and organize curriculum for the middle schools, integrating technology and lessons that support not only the Common Core, but the mathematical teaching practices. We have created a living document, which is multifaceted. Each unit addresses a plethora of items, such as differentiation in support of challenged learners, enrichment, user-friendly lessons for our STEAM students, support for second language learners and special ed students, lessons to address the multiple intelligences, to name a few. As a result, we know better than anyone how daunting a task it will be for teachers to implement this on their own without the guidance and support of instructional coach on site next year. In fact, we tested out parts of the units with new teachers in the classroom this year. We even work with some seasoned teachers, such as the District Teacher of the Year. It was this experience that made us realize that the only way these units could be used with fidelity is if the teachers had support guiding them through all the details of the pacing guides. We must also remember that our district went through a very grueling process to establish a new teacher evaluation system. As a result, there are many new changes as to what site administrators should see in a classroom. Therefore, teachers must show competency in these new areas. Of all the times for the district to support instructional coaches, now is the time given this
junior at Slo High. I had the privilege to have Ms. Sheridan as my counselor during my freshman and sophomore year. During my first 2 years in high school, Ms. Sheridan got to know me, my strengths and my weaknesses. She got me through an emotional crisis, or two, a three-week-long illness, and helped me decide which classes to take. She got to know me so well, she could tell how I was doing just by the tone of my voice. Three counselors are responsible for over 1,200 kids. This means dealing with emotional crises, college apps, letters of rec, everything. The counselors are the backbone of the school, and limiting their availability is the last thing the administration should consider. I know Ms. Sheridan's guidance has been instrumental in my success in 9th and 10th grade, and has been influential in my success this year academically, in 4 AP classes, as well as socially. I am so grateful to her. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any further public comment at this time? Seeing none, we will move on. We are now item 7.01, business and budget. The May revise.
Yeah, so just a quick update on the May revise. The governor each... Yeah, it's good. It's exciting. No new money, but it's good. It's exciting. So the governor puts out his budget each year in January with kind of his proposed budget. And then each May, middle May, he comes out with kind of his revisions based on new budget projections, where he's at. And so, you know, Governor Brown, like him or not, he really has, I think, done a good job in terms of the LCFF and the changes that he's made in terms of the budget. And he's really sticking to his guns in terms of not overspending. So despite the increased revenues and things that they're seeing in the state, he's really trying to maintain kind of that leveled spending. And in fact, has come up with kind of a rainy day fund should the economy suffer in the future year. So those are kind of the key points, I would say, from the May revise, is that there really was no new increase in funding for school districts. Specifically for education in the May revise. There's a little bit of money towards putting in Wi-Fi throughout the states, but it's really not a lot of money that's been allocated for it, and it's only for districts that have huge need. And so I don't feel like, you know, we'll see what happens, but I don't know that San Luis Coastal is going to fit those parameters. He definitely is not a proponent of the expansion of TK or even the expansion of preschool, I would say, at this time. And I think mainly that's kind of that conservative nature for Governor Brown, not wanting to overspend and, you know, begin a program or something that has to continue on despite where they're at. And so that was, you know, something that was discussed within the May revise. The current plan of LCFF is roughly school districts throughout the state outside of basic aid districts or community fund districts like us are going to receive an average of about $730 per student throughout the state. Now, because we don't receive LCFF funds, we're not going to receive any of those increased funds going towards education. So that, again, is an average. So what you're seeing, even when I go to business meetings and talk to everyone else, you know, throughout the county, you're seeing dramatic increases in funds in, let's say, places like Santa Maria, and really hardly any change maybe in districts like Templeton or Tascadero. So there, you know, though that's a 700 average, it's really not the same depending on schools. And that's because while all schools get a base fund amount, the supplemental and concentration grants only go to schools based on their free and reduced lunch, foster homeless youth, and EL learners. So those districts that have large you know, large student populations in those areas are receiving, you know, twice as much funds as maybe in as other districts. So that said, it's still more money towards education. And, it, you know, in terms of all across the board, I think it is a positive thing, a positive step in the direction for education in the state of California. Again, the rainy day fund will be interesting to see how that comes out, because he is putting a lot of money into that rainy day fund for future years. It looks like he has some approval from the legislature to kind of build that up, and so we'll see how that goes. And then really probably the last key thing that came out of the May revise was this this plan to basically bring STRS back up to a status where right now the California teacher retirement system is showing this huge deficit in the future. And so part of his charge was to come up with a plan to how are we going to deal with that. And so that is a huge concern for us as a district, because should they come forward and should they get passed. So those are kind of the breakdown. The last one is just adult education. We have kept our adult education program going, probably have one of the hugest in the state of California. Sally Ames has done a great job. That is it looking like the governor is going to turn that into a categorical program, most likely in 15-16. What that looks like, the parameters, how that's going to be. For us as a community-funded district, that's actually a good thing, because if it's not tied to the LCFF, we may get some of those funds. And so we'll see how that comes out, and the plan for that is established in the coming years. So that's a basic rundown. I think Julie's going to go to May Revise on Wednesday. I'm going to one on Thursday. The only question we have right now is about deferrals. So as part of the governor's budget, it's to pay down deferrals, basically. So districts have not received even their general fund money over the course of years. For us, one of those deferrals is mandated costs. And so from what we originally had thought was that mandated costs was not going to be accomplished in this year, possibly next year. But I'm hoping to hear maybe on Wednesday or Thursday a little bit more about that and whether some mandated costs or how that's going to tie in.
Mr. Unger, you have a question?
Yeah, actually a question and a comment. Thank you for bringing up the governor's proposal on STRS. And I appreciate the $3.5 million additional, really well over 100% increase in contributions from the district, huge contribution in the district from our teachers as well. That's about 4% of our budget, mm-hmm. Additionally to what we're paying. And I just want to point that out to everybody. We're talking about a huge chunk of our budget. Recognizing, though, that in order for STRS to be fully funded or to get there, we're going to need to, at some point, do something. It's about $74 billion in arrears right now. That's it. I would say at an unrealistic rate of return, a 7.5% rate of return. Real rate of return is probably lower than that, and if they get it to about where it should be, it's actually, I think, about $130 billion in arrears and STRS. Huge stuff. And I think we all, I'm just going to look at you all, and I'm going to say I think this is something we all need to be paying attention to. It is going to affect each and every one of us who are in STRS, and I'm in STRS, and I'm worried. The second thing I do want to ask you, though, we as a basic aid district were receiving what we used to call a fair share of pain. Mm-hmm. Are we still getting that fair share of pain, or is it gone since we're not getting any categoricals and we're maxed out at our basic aid allocations?
So with the LCFF being approved last year, one of the things that they did was they held our categorical funding level to our 12-13 level. So we're still receiving that amount of categorical funds from the state that we received in 12-13. So there's no more where they're chipping away at that, cutting more of that. So that was part of the plan with LCFF, was that they would leave us at that funding level. So we're still receiving that amount of categorical funds, which is, it's about $8 million, $9 million cut from where we were prior.
And the other question I have is, I'd love to know how much money we're owed in MA that we haven't seen MA reimbursements on.
Mm-hmm.
For every, it's money that we get in order to serve kids and to make sure that kids get access to health care in California. It hasn't been reimbursed for, I believe, 3 years now, and I'll bet we're owed close to $1 million, would be my guess.
That was my estimate, was about $900,000. Is this one? The last one we got was in August of 2012, and that was for 10-11 second quarter. So I think they owe us about 8 or 9 quarters now. And I averaged it. It was about $115,000 per quarter. So it's about $900,000 at least.
Can I?
That's a whole nother.
May I follow up on that? I'm glad Chris brought that up. It came up at the meeting that we were at with CSBA this weekend. And along with that question, my question is, so when I see in the budget that we're budgeting for MA, and then I hear from Chris and the Special Services Department that we're getting MA money, is what's in the budget, does that represent what's being withheld? Or is that, are you sort of holding that in?
We actually took it out of this year's budget, because at this point we haven't received anything, so we don't really expect to receive anything this year. We put it back into next year's budget at $300,000. We always just budget $300,000 because it comes in, you know, some years we get 2 quarters, some years we get 6 quarters. We never really know how much we're going to get in a year, but we always budget $300,000. So it's in the budget for next year.
So in essence, does that mean sometimes we're supporting programs or positions that would be MA funded, are we doing that out of our general fund?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a good thing.
Long time since we received mandated cost funds. We did move to the block grant this year, and so that was one of the things that the change, you know, because they were basically not paying us anything at all. So, we are on that block grant cycle. Should the day come where we are actually paid mandated costs again, that will be, you know, something we need to consider again if we go back to the old method versus the block grant. So,
thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. Okay, we will move to items 8.02, which is the negotiations with the Service Employees International Union and their reopener proposal and ours.
So this is the time when we put forward our proposal and then SEIU also puts forward their proposal. And then, so the public has an opportunity to see what each group is interested in negotiating. And so it's a requirement under the law to have a public hearing before you start negotiating on these matters.
So what's being projected up there is now the SEIU proposal. Also have our reopener to be projected out there or not?
We do have those two items, but as a technicality, you need to open a public hearing for this particular item and a separate one for the boards.
Okay, thank you. So we now have a public hearing on this, and if there's anybody who would like to come forward and address the board, now is the time. Seeing no one, we'll close that, and then we will look at the board's proposal. That's now on the screen, and actually, I'll read it. It says, salary and benefits. The district desires to provide a total compensation package that fairly compensates staff in relation to comparable districts in a manner that respects the financial stability of the district. The district looks forward to commencing negotiations with the association for the 2013-14 school year in a collaborative and problem-solving manner. Is there anybody in the public who wishes to address the board on this? Seeing no one, we'll move on. Thank you very much. Okay, we are now on the item 9.01, the authorization for the end of the year transfers.
That's me. Well, if this looks familiar to you, it's because we bring it to you every year. And what this is about is at our interim reports, you have the opportunity to approve any revisions that we've made to the budget. And at year end, we don't have that opportunity until the books are already closed. So this is sort of a pre-approval for us to do transfers to close the books at year end.
We will take the motions, and then we can open it for public comment. Okay, so is there a motion for the authorization for the end-of-the-year transfers?
I'll move approval of resolution number 13-13-14.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Millar. Any discussion from the board? Any questions? It's a roll call vote, but I think we have to open it to public comment, I believe. So is there anybody who wishes to address the board on this issue? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to the roll call vote.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer? Dr. Eisendath Rogers? Mr. Buckman? Passes 7-0.
Okay. We are now on the education protection count. This is part of the new LCFF. Is that correct?
No, actually. This is part of Proposition 30 that was passed in November of 2012. The Education Protection Act gives districts about $200 per ADA. And in revenue limit districts, it offsets their revenue limit because we're not revenue limit. We actually get the funds from the state. And this resolution requires the board to approve our spending plan. As we used it last year, we plan on spending 100% of this on Los Osos Middle School teacher salary and benefits.
Expenditures. Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there a motion to approve this resolution?
I'll move approval of resolution number 14-13-14.
So we have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Buckman. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll go to the roll call vote.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendath Rogers? Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
And Mr. Quisenberry, just so that you know, this as part of this act, we have to post the resolution as well as the spending plan on our website.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkren. So if anybody in the public wants to see that, they can review it at slcusd.org. Okay, thank you. Okay, we are at the Facilities Master Plan review and... Oh, sorry, did I jump ahead? I did. Okay. 10.01, public hearing and discussion of the LCAT.
You're welcome to jump ahead.
I was trying to skip a few things here.
Thank you, Mr. Quisenberry. Tonight you will hold a public hearing on our local control accountability plan. Prior to that, I would like to spend a few moments discussing the process and product of our LCAT. And so, fair warning, I will editorialize a bit because I just can't help myself. I really appreciate what Governor Brown has attempted in this new and radical departure for school funding and planning. He has fundamentally changed school financing, removing the strings from categorical funds and dramatically increasing state monies toward English learners, socioeconomically disadvantaged, foster, and homeless youth. We will not see any of that largesse because we remain a community-funded school district. But I applaud any time public dollars go to public education. The benefit to our neighbors actually benefits our own legacy. He also asks that we embrace local opinions and beliefs about how some of our dollars are spent, as long as there are measured results for those expenditures. He actually warned that we will revert back to state control on how we spend our dollars if those extra funds go to employee raises or programs or expenditures that do not link with improved student achievement, especially for those target groups. So what you have is a local plan. It is a privilege to be able to have our relative freedom in designing it. The process we have used to conceive our plan has been more overt and inclusive than most districts we have surveyed around us. many districts have developed or are developing a plan, and then they hold a public hearing to showcase it with a specific meeting for parents and community members included, as required by law, then answering questions and making adjustments per board direction. We decided to seek out information prior to the writing of our plan. We went to every school site and solicited input. We spoke to parent groups, community and business leaders, nonprofit agencies, the District English Language Advisory Council, Title I parents, principals, 22 meetings in all. We researched best practices for gaining student achievement. We initiated a public survey and sent links to all employees to comment freely about district direction. We published all the results, warts and accolades. Then we wrote our plan, our LCAP, taking into account these three things: our district initiatives for student success, the requirements that we have to meet under the LCAP provisions and guidelines, and the input from all that we heard. The writing of this plan was a team effort, because if it were my plan, it would look different. It would probably be more unpopular. I'm sure Mr. Pinkerton would have different ideas about how to spend money. But our team, many of whom are behind me, actually argued over it, collated public and teacher input, spoke to parents, took the red pen to our budget, and kept our personnel costs at an acceptable level. It includes increases in elementary counseling services, mental health therapy services, and takes the 504 oversight off of counselors because we heard those concerns. But it does not restore counseling to former levels. It increases transportation, and a late bus gives students breakfast, reinstates summer school because our EL parents and socioeconomically disadvantaged families need that support. It doesn't increase preschool services to the extent I wish it could have, as I believe that is the single greatest intervention strategy we could employ. It doesn't increase instructional coaching to the level I wish it did, because we know with certainty that embedded professional development in real time is the single greatest means for enacting change in the learning culture. But we did listen to our teachers by refining our model of coaching. We have our coaches at our school sites full-time, holding them also responsible for teaching intervention programs and reducing by half or more the number of pull-out professional development days. There are things we heard when we were at sites that are not actually addressed in this plan, but we are being responsive anyway. We are reducing K-3 class sizes. That's not an LCAP decision. We are unilaterally putting 100 minutes of PE instruction per week at the first through sixth grade level out there, but it isn't great. So we have included a summary of the major components in a shorter 5-page report that is part of your board packet. At the June 10th meeting, we will break out all of the budgets down in our LEA plan, and that will incorporate the LCAP and other maintenance of efforts budgets, and hopefully this will provide a much clearer roadmap for you. But we are prepared to give you specifics about any area. I've been reading Doris Kearns Goodwin's latest book, The Bully Pulpit, which is about the presidencies of Theodore Roosevelt and William Howard Taft, and specifically about the use of the press and speech making and public forums and public sentiment to advance an agenda. Teddy Roosevelt was very adept at utilizing the bully pulpit. Taft, who was ideologically exactly aligned with Roosevelt, just wasn't as good at it. As required by our LCAP rules, Dr. Prater attended the DLAC group of EL parents last week, presented the plan in Spanish and English to advance our agenda. He used that bully pulpit. He received a standing ovation from our EL parents. Tonight is a public hearing, so this is our bully pulpit. I am obviously using it right now because I think we have put together a plan that is responsive, deliberate, and focused on the right agenda, with the right direction of resources for our children. And others will beg to differ, and this is a good thing. It is what is great about democracy. It is now your responsibility to advance your agenda as a board, separating the hyperbole from the facts, the merits of a confluence of many opinions, and direction for our future. Staff's request of the board at this conclusion of the public hearing is for you to individually ask any questions you may. And if we can answer them tonight, we will. If they require research, we will get it to you. However, if you wish to change anything in this plan, please corporately indicate what you want more of or less of, or what cut or addition you would like to make. And it doesn't have to be detailed. We're happy to work with even broad ideas. But please give us either consensus by vote or what you desire, so that when we bring back a final plan to the June 10th meeting for adoption, we know what we're looking at. it is sometimes difficult to make changes at the 11th hour. So even if you have an indication of a change as a corporate body, we can do that between now and then, but we'd like to know. But just know your staff, your superintendent, is satisfied with what is in place here before you. And I suppose it's time to open the public hearing.
Yes, if you wish to address the board, we'll first take those people who have filled out the request to speak form. This is Mrs. Sheffer.
I have Anna Mullen and Buffy Anderson. No,
hi there. I'm Buffy Anderson. I am a counselor at Pacific Beach High School and at Laguna Middle School. And I would like to talk a little bit tonight about the presence of marriage and family therapy interns on our campuses. It sounded like we could have some more clarity in that issue. Megan Healy and I are both going to speak to that tonight in terms of what that actually looks like on our campuses and with our collaboration with them. Having worked with marriage and family therapy interns from both behavioral health and the women's shelter at Laguna Middle School for several years now, we have seen the benefits of those programs. Unfortunately, we've seen some significant limitations of those programs as well. Having them on our campus does allow us to give some at-risk students some additional support, support that they might not otherwise have because, well, usually because their parents aren't able or aren't willing to get them to therapy outside of school. But it is important to note that these marriage and family therapist interns in our school provide one very specific service to a very small population of students. Our best estimate is about 5% of our students per school year. Additionally, these two programs, one through the women's shelter and the other through behavioral health, have very well-defined parameters that they have to work in. This limits the students that they can serve depending on the student's situation and the severity of their presenting issues. That means a student with significant mental health needs, maybe a need for medication for depression or anxiety, can't be seen by our marriage and family therapy intern from either program. They would say that within the parameters of their programs, that student's not appropriate, and they will not see that student or work with them on campus. They would have to have a referral off campus. Ironically, a student with substance use issues, someone who maybe uses on a regular basis, can't be seen by our marriage and family therapy intern from behavioral health, previously known as drug and alcohol services, because again, that program is prevention and early intervention only. So they say that that student who's a drug user is not appropriate for their program and can't be seen on campus. So this means that these most at-risk students are not being seen in these programs, which leaves the school counselor alone to help these students while they're on campus. Another drawback of the MFT interns is that they are, in fact, interns. They're still working. They're still learning. Some of them come to us a bit green without a whole lot of professional experience. Sometimes they have limited experience working with adolescents, and most of them have not had any experience on a school campus, which means that as a school counselor, we're really facilitating their interaction with every facet of the school in any way they need that. The lack of consistency is a concern as well, because as the interns gain experience, they usually move on, and then we're left with new interns, so there's quite a bit of turnover there.
The comprehensive school counseling program addresses academic, personal, social, and career development. With the reduction in credentialed school counselors, we have been forced to make significant compromises to the board-adopted comprehensive counseling and guidance program that was created in alignment with the ASCA standards. Programmatic changes occurred, and career exploration has been cut entirely. The overwhelming number of students struggling with safety issues has left us unable to provide prevention and skill-building strategies to the students struggling with typical concerns that we see with adolescents. Academic counseling has been drastically reduced. We agree that we spend an inordinate amount of time with the most intense needs and that we should be allocating the majority of our time supporting the majority of our students. We understand the district's vision to contract with outside agencies to provide support for students and allow for school counselors to focus on the ASCA standards. Before spending additional money on these services, please reflect on the system itself and determine if it is even viable to function as it is intended, as there are certain limitations that are undeniable. With these agencies, there is a genuine lack of communication, collaboration, and sharing of information with school personnel. Our communication is generally one way, as these contracted agencies do not allow an open exchange of information. This means when they see kids and they aren't there, and the kid comes to see us, we have no information and have to start from square one every time. This creates more work and doesn't save any money. We have a number of students engaging in self-harm and or displaying suicidal ideation. Our prevention and early intervention counselor from Behavioral Health Services is not permitted within the agency guidelines to serve these students, and an outside referral is necessary. This does not alleviate the issue at school and leaves the school counselor and administration to handle any and all issues that arise during school hours. This does not save us time or money. These contracted agencies with limited hours and limited communication do not manage crisis on a regular basis as they are intended. If we are going to spend money on increasing agency involvement on campuses, they have to be agencies that can serve our most at-risk students that take up most of our time. That is not our current system, and the district proposal does not address this. These agencies are not accessible to all students. If a student meets the criteria for accessing the services, then the student requires permission slips, and only a very small specific percentage of students are served, approximately less than 5% of our current allocation. Of the 5% of students served, their access to that support person is severely limited by the sheer fact that the support person is not on campus every day, and issues regularly arise when they are not there. This does not alleviate the responsibilities of the PPS, comprehensive counselor, or the administrative staff.
Could you summarize, please? I'm out of time.
Okay. The credentialed school counselor is often the most consistent school personnel in the struggling students' lives. We work with families year after year. We operate as their support, their advocate, their mentor, their tutor, their cheerleader, and their guide. We build rapport through routine tasks like grade checks and schedule changes. We ultimately provide a connection that would not otherwise be there in order to support them when the needs arise. We help students navigate the realities of middle school complexities. We work with the whole child, and we coordinate the multitude of resources and agencies involved. We foster resiliency. This has been compromised immensely this year, and our students deserve better than a fragmented, compartmentalized system. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Healy.
Myla Labar, and I apologize. I didn't realize that our little timer and everything wasn't showing up there with the buzzer, so I'll just have to indicate when your 3 minutes are up. Thank you. 3.
3 minutes, okay. Good evening, school board members. By way of introduction, my name is Myla Vujovic-Labar. I am honored to have taught for the San Luis Coastal Unified School District for over 30 years. In short, I am here tonight to begin with kudos and also express my concerns. First of all, due to certificated counseling cutbacks, I want to applaud the dynamic administrative duo of John Calandro and Scott Scaldi. As administrators, they took on the role of disciplinarians, and that move gave the counselors time to truly counsel rather than have to wear the hat of both strict disciplinarian and empathetic counselor. That being said, I need to speak to my concerns of the reduction in counselors this past year. As any teacher knows, we wear many hats during the day. We teach, we pseudo-parent, we are comedians and philosophers, we praise and we scold. At the end of each day, most of us go to bed with a superb feeling that we have made a difference in the world. This year, I have felt that I have had to put on my counseling hat more and more each school day. Some days it has been a one-on-one, and other days it has been that I've had to take precious instructional time to underline a life lesson with a story or two. This year, during my class time, I have had to address topics of suicide, drug abuse, self-harm, eating disorders, career planning, bullying, and more due to the lack of counselor access. As a case in point, the traditional career day at Laguna Middle School was not organized this year due to our lack of counselors for over 300 eighth graders. Thanks to professional parents in my own classes, arts and math, or STEAM, I would prefer to be teaching and let the certificated, qualified counselors to do their job to counsel. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Wilbur-Slavar.
Rose Fowler.
Thank you for letting me have an opportunity to speak again. I know I spoke at the last board meeting. I'm seeing the proposals that you had asked for. They don't quite meet my need. There's a .4 going to be put into Sinsheimer that hadn't had a counselor, and a .2 to cover Teach. I want to talk about the ratios that we had before. With just a 2.0 FTE increase in the elementary, our ratios could go down to a manageable level. It's certainly not what we want or what we've had in the past, but it's something that I think is doable and workable. I have some paperwork for you that I'm going to have Jim pass out as far as the elementary goes. These are the numbers that I have for this year. You can see that the MFTI covered 2% of my population. If they were there for 2 days, that would only cover 4% of the kids. And I see the problems that Megan delineated as well with the MFTI. With the family advocate, they are seeing 7% of my students. Again, that's a great help, but it doesn't deal with the day-to-day needs of the students that are there. Also, I have a PIP aide at both sites. When I had additional funding, that's what I requested. It's somebody that sees my students from K through 3 that are in need of some support. They get to see an aide half an hour a week for 12 weeks. That makes a huge difference in those kids' lives. They saw 40 students this year for me in Del Mar, and that is my first line of intervention for those kids. Sometimes they don't need anything else after that. That takes care of them. But this year there was a mom with cancer. Her child needed some support. There was a mother that passed away. That child needed support. They needed support on a regular basis by somebody there at school that could anchor them. We had a student that came with anxiety. We had to make a plan for her to be able to transition to leaving her mother and entering the class. That was a daily duty that my aide could provide, and I provided the plan for her to transition, so in 3 months or so she was able to get to the class by herself. Those are victories that we see. I have lots of paperwork here. These are all the students that were affected this year by that PIP aid. It's a very reasonably cost program if anybody was interested in looking into it. Also, I want to talk about the high school. If we just had that increase of a 2.0 FTE for elementary counseling, it would bring our ratios down to somewhat more of a manageable level. At the high school level, they went from a 300 to 1 previously to a 450 to 1. This is a 50% increase in their workloads, which is unmanageable. I'll wrap it up, yes. If we added a 2.7 at the secondary level, that would get those levels back to 350, which isn't ideal. The state thinks 250 to 1 was what they had before when we were trying to work on the dropout rate, but 351 would definitely be better to manage than the 451 they're dealing with right now. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Fowler. Please come forward if you wish to address the board.
Thank you. I want to apologize for not filling out the form, but several things came up in listening to our speakers that I know you heard that I would also like my comments to be included. I'm Jim Nett, a teacher here in the district, and a person who has, as you can talk to any teacher, seen the effects of the cuts we suffered last year. And when counseling was cut last year, we all remember it was because we needed to trim that budget. And as we all sat in this very room and listened to the reasons why it had to be cut, it all was because of the budget. I didn't hear any discussion last year of why counseling wasn't necessary. I didn't hear any reason given last year because we had so much counselors, we could trim that back. We were meeting the needs of our students. It was simply because, as I remember all of you saying, as you had to make that decision, our backs are to the wall. We have to balance this budget. It's going to hurt, but we need to take that step. And with more money now and the 1.5%, I believe, increase Ryan spoke to last time. Ryan, is that still on the books? with millions of dollars possibly that could be attributed however you want to spend them, many of us have seen the consequences we've had to live with. I myself, working in a classroom, as you've heard other teachers, are spending more time not educating students, but even leaving my room to help a student who's outside talking about the boy Rose put on her papers. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Nett.
My name's Judy Neuhauser. I also want to echo what people have been saying today about counseling, but there's another aspect to it that I want you to think about. In my classroom this year, I've had a number of very disruptive students, and they have very high needs. And it's not just that they are disrupting their own education. They are disrupting everyone's education. Marilyn, I was so pleased to see you show up at Monarch Grove and just kind of walk the classrooms. And you came upon one classroom where the teacher had left her kids out to go out to recess early because she had a child who was sobbing uncontrollably. That's everyone's common core educational academic time that we're losing day in and day out. Because there's not the support, there's nowhere I can send them. If Rose isn't on campus, there's nowhere really that I can send them. And so they stay in the classroom. That storming around the room, that disruption of the other students, that affects everyone in the class. And it certainly affects the teacher as you begin to lose your thread of thought, and you certainly lose your well-planned lesson plan. So I would really hope that this board would realize that this is becoming a larger issue, not a smaller issue. I know you were shown graphs where the suspensions were going down, but I think as you realize that those suspensions are going in school rather than out of school, they really haven't gone down, they've gone up. That's what I've seen in Monarch Grove, at least over the years. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Neuhauser. Is there anyone else who wishes to please come forward if you wish to address the board?
Thank you. I wasn't going to speak tonight, but I feel very passionate about this. And I love
my job. Excuse
me,
could you tell everyone
yes,
who you are?
Yes, I'm Jennifer Sheridan. I'm the counselor at Loams, Los Osos Middle School. I'm proud to be there. I was a counselor at San Luis Obispo High School. Miss it very much. And I love my job. And what I just want to say is that, as we all know, relationship is key. And we had a crisis at Loams this year, and relationship was key. Kids knew the people that were there 5 days a week. We had wonderful support during that time, and the kids utilized that as best we can, but it was kind of like a Band-Aid. But when you have a relationship, it makes a difference. Those kids feel comfortable right away. And in crisis, it makes a big difference. It made a big difference to me. I miss my colleagues at San Luis High School and having a team. I have 547 kids under my charge, one counselor. We do have some PEI support, but my fellow counselors have delineated some of the issues with that. We're grateful for them, but they serve a small portion. And I feel like we're an extension of the classroom. Our teachers really need us. I really need our teachers so that these kids feel comfortable accessing academics. I feel like we're the most financially efficient. We're trained to work in the public schools. We know how to use academics and career counseling to, you know, build those social emotional connections. And it's a beautiful thing. We're very cost effective. I hope that you'll look at that when you make your decision. And thank you for all my opportunity here and my fellow counselors. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Sheridan.
Buenas tardes. My name is Carla Robles, elementary school counselor at Hawthorne and Pacheco, two Title I schools. I have about 900 students, and I just really would like for you to consider bringing back more counselors. This is how my day went this morning. I was at one site dealing with self-injury with several sixth grade students while
A parent from my other school is trying to reach me because she has now become homeless. So how can I be effective and be present when I'm the only one there that the students trust and can come to? The interns have been great. Well, an intern has been great at one site because we have a history of working with the women's shelter. But at my other site, it didn't work very well. So I just like the board to really consider and take a look at your budget and think about how we can really support our students. And it's not fair.
And in Morro Bay, we don't have a lot of other options. And our families that are needing the therapy, really, they themselves sometimes don't have any other options. So is it ideal? Is it perfect? Maybe not, but it's so much better than having nothing. Our kids are getting some support. And even if they have, you know, with a therapist that they have on campus, they still do have connection to a school counselor, and they have connection to myself as a member of our counseling team. Also bringing in a family advocate and having that be a part of our team where the family advocate can help make connections as well. I just think that approach where we have the school counselor, we need our school counselor. I'm so blessed to have a fabulous school counselor in Rose Fowler, but we need the MFT interns as well. We need to increase what we have over one day a week. We need that family advocate, and you know, we really need time for us all working together as a team to support the needs that we have at our school. Thank you. And I did talk to the other principals as well that have the MFT interns that are here tonight, and they also said, yes, we like our interns. We want our interns. We need more time. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Gold. Is there any further public comment? Okay, then we will come back to the board. Is there anybody who would... Any questions, any comments? Ms. Sheffer.
I have a couple of questions following up on a couple of the issues raised. One is, would it appear that we're able to broaden the service providers at all, some of them have limitations as to what they're able to do, or there are other agencies or other resources we can use so that we can find either interns or other people who can meet the needs of more children or different kinds of problems.
Mr. Dowler, do you have a response to that? And if you don't, I'll give it a shot, but probably more knowledgeable.
Could you repeat the question, though? Because I didn't get all the parts of it.
Okay. One of the things that was raised was limitations by a couple of agencies as to the kinds of students or kinds of problems they're able to deal with and those that they're not. For instance, I heard can't see students with significant mental health issues who may require medication, can't see students who are actually using drugs. Some of them can do their role as prevention, but if they're an active drug user, the MFTs can't see them. So I'm wondering if we're looking for more people who can reach a broader spectrum of our students.
Well, it's hard to answer a response that's incorrect. So basically, our women's shelter counselors, it depends. If they're a CHAP grant funded, they're very specifically targeted to certain populations of kids. Those are free to our schools. So if women's shelter wants to provide us with three free intern therapists, I'm more than happy to take them and distribute them. And that's one of the, I think the one at Laguna Middle School is grant funded through the CHAP program. So that's an example of that. So when we contract with women's shelter, it's not restricted in who they can see. So there's no restrictions on that. As it pertains to county behavioral health, I've never heard, that's what we use in all our, after a kid has gotten in trouble for using drugs or alcohol or being in possession of drugs and alcohol, that's who we use. I've never heard of them turning away a student that is a known drug or alcohol user. So I'm not even sure how to respond to that. So when we contract for services, we gain control over the abilities of us to share information, and we should do a better job controlling or working with our MOUs and our contracts with those agencies. And that's something I've talked to both County Behavioral Health and Women's Shelter about, being able to share information more effectively and building that into our contracts. So that's also important to me, but I've never heard of them being restrictive, both Women's Shelter or Behavioral Health, when we contract with them. Does that answer your question?
Yes, but it sounds like, you know, there's some disagreement or different information out there among the counselors.
You heard correctly. Yes.
So that sounds like some clarification perhaps from you or somebody is needed to...
Yeah, I'm not sure how to respond to something that I believe to be completely incorrect. Now, the issue in terms of not being able to see students with significant mental health issues, yeah, that would be a referral that we'd give to, you know, youth services or a psychiatrist in order to get medication. But I don't know if that restricts their ability to see a therapist when they're on campus, but they're not going to provide specific therapy for a mental health disorder of that nature. We really understand how these systems and bureaucracies work.
With this new model that's currently proposed, Mr. Dollar, do you think that's going to be somehow improved or enhanced, or deal with some of the issues that haven't been maybe addressed well this year?
I think we have a lot of fine-tuning to do. With our current model that we're proposing next year, in addition to the staffing that we propose, there's a lot of fine-tuning work that needs to be done. There's no question. We got to define the role of our PPS counselors better, more clearly. We need to improve their efficiency, and we need to better define our relationships with the organizations we're working with. And I think that can solve a lot of the problems that they were talking about in terms of working with these groups. Absolutely.
Mr. Unger?
Yeah, it sounds to me, Chris, like we have a lot of work to do here, because what I heard from you folks is that that kids aren't getting the mental health services they need when they need them. I must tell you that I think the idea of the MFT interns is great, the contracts we have with County Mental Health is great, the work we do with Women's Shelter is great, but I am going to need to find out what those limitations look like, if kids are getting help when they're in crisis and things like that. That's very important for me, and I'd like to know that by the next meeting. We talk about, you know, I heard someone mention that we have extra money. We don't have extra money, and I just want to make sure everybody's clear to that. We have about 1.5 to 1.8% new property taxes. We have step and column that we're paying for, and we have about a 15 to 16% increase in our benefits. Is that not correct?
The budget hearing follows.
Thanks.
The LCAP
could you talk about that right now, please?
So, I mean, basically, we're flat funded. So we, you know, what you're going to hear from me is that we took in about $77 million last year, and we spent $77 million mm-hmm. coming into this year, which is much better mm-hmm. than we've been over the past couple of years, where we've actually deficit spended. So, but some of those funds that were utilized in our budget last year were one-time funds. So we are seeing a decrease in funds for next year in terms of revenues, and so we have decreased our expenditures some as well to meet those, but we're at a flat level, so any increases in personnel costs that will require a cut in some other way.
Okay. And then the last thing that I asked about last time, and I'd like to know more about that, is it does concern me that it at least my look over the revision is that we haven't addressed the concern of larger schools having more needs than smaller schools. And what do we do about a school, like I think we talked last time, what do we do about a school like Del Mar that's got 500 students, close to 500 students anyway, that is sharing 0.5 with Monarch that has about, 330 students or something like that, both recognizing that both have significant needs. But You know, that's 200, close to nearly, well, close to nearly, whatever, 200 students more at Del Mar, a much higher percentage of Title I students, homeless students, things like that I know at Del Mar. So I don't have any suggestions on where we could get money for that, but I think it's important for us to look at equality between schools and counseling between schools based, I don't know if we want to look at it based on school attendance or something like that, you know, but I think we need to look at that as well. I know Rose talked about actually about a 4.7 FTE. My calculation is that's at least $500,000. That's a lot of money when we have no new money essentially coming in and when we're facing increased costs across the board. So those are things that I have an interest in.
Can I? So one thing that we've looked at doing is for our big Title I schools is shifting so that they have a 0.3 PPS counselor at their school sites, and then our, the other schools would have a 0.4, so 2 days a week, and then we'd increase our big Title I schools into 3 days a week for PPS support, and also increasing their MFTI funding. Can I also comment on the funding allocations? What is that? One thing that we're looking at doing is utilizing LEA funds, which are reimbursements. So we would be using a budget that's—it's basically, you know, it's for LEA Medi-Cal reimbursement costs, and we'd be using that for our contracts or for our MFTI services. So it's not like we'd be using general fund monies that would otherwise go into salaries. So I think that's an important distinction here: is we're not taking from the general fund to support these contracts.
Made very clear to us by the civil rights groups when they look at those things, did we actually listen to the input we got and did we align the resources with that input? And then the final thing I'd just like to say that I think we need to consider for next year, I am very much in favor of the instructional coaches, but I think there's a lot of belief, and I want to thank the Teachers Association for sharing their survey with us. There are people that believe in it passionately. There are some people that believe it works, it doesn't work, and other people that believe that it's not worth the money that we're spending on it. I do think that we need to look at developing a metric for as difficult as it may be to determine whether, in fact, the resources we're spending actually are leading to student achievement. I don't know how we're going to get there, but I think it's going to be real important as we move forward and we just try to make decisions on whether we're effectively spending our money to close that achievement gap. Is it working or isn't it working? And if it's not working, what are we going to do about it? And what adjustments are we going to make? And I've had this discussion with Dr. Prater, and I appreciate the comments that Dr. Prater made. It's a whole new ball game for us. No new money, huge expectations, and rightfully so. We have the achievement gap. We know there's an achievement gap in this district, and we know we really have to do something about it. It's our responsibility and our obligation. So I'm just going to close with that.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. I want to thank everyone who's addressed the board this evening. You made some very compelling arguments, and you've given us a fairly good idea of what it is you face every day. And having said that, I'm still interested in seeing how we can work with this, with the district's proposal as it stands, and whether that needs any kind of massaging. But I would agree with Mr. Unger that adding back four, almost five counselors may not be the solution that we can afford to take. So, Dr. Prater, did you wish to say something?
I can't help myself. Yeah, no, I guess, I too appreciate all the feedback and comments from the public. I really do. I genuinely do. This is a most challenging project, if you will, to bring something before you that maintains a budget that controls our personnel costs so we don't go beyond a place where it forces us into a mode of having to lay employees off. I'm desperately trying to avoid that scenario. I'll be the first to admit that this is a work in progress and it's not perfect. However, I think given the totality of the feedback that we've collected, given the very clear expectations from the state to close the achievement gap, looking at all that we're trying to accomplish with Common Core, the challenges that teachers face in the classroom, both academically and social-emotionally with the students. I mean, it's a complex riddle. I had I met with a community leader, a business leader the other day, and he heard me speak at a economic chamber event, and he commented to me that he didn't believe the public in general understood all that educators face. He really believes, since his children have now grown older, that he's convinced that the public in general has no clue what is being placed on the shoulders of our teachers, our educators, our principals, our counselors, our support staff. And I know he's absolutely right. This document, when I look at the synthesized version that was included in your board packet, I tend to look at that because reading the LCAP document template gives me a headache. So this document, the synthesized document, really helps me understand from 1,000 feet above the ground what we in fact are trying to do. And I look at you this evening and I see the challenge in front of you. However, I believe that we have done the very best that we know how to do to balance out all of the needs that we heard, all the comments and requests that we heard since we began outreach in January. And our team is very observant. We haven't been able to fully address that very need because we do believe it's important. And I plan to address that. So given that, I'm looking for direction from you. Is there something substantial you wish me to address? Change, knowing that any change in this document is going to require that we go back and wrestle with the numbers again. And we're here to do that. However, I really think it's important prior to June 10th, which is our next board meeting, when I'm asking you to adopt this, that I get a really good sense of where you're at so that I can produce a good product for you on that night.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I personally want to thank everybody for coming, taking the time, and talking to this issue. It's always good to hear all sides of it, and it really helps me make decisions. That said, I'm really interested in Chris's comments and what the response will be. I had some small, possibly small, other things that had caught my attention, and I'm going to just try and do it off of the five-page document and not the deep document, and I will get the LEA document confused in here, so please help me understand this. When we look at this, there's been some references within the documents of teacher evaluation, and what I'd like to see, if it's possible and if it's applicable, is also principal evaluation. It seems like that would be a part of this, a part of the LCAP as we go. And I am still concerned. I brought this up last time, and I guess I'm still concerned about. In fact, in the LEA, there was, in it, as it talks about parent involvement, there were the action plans and who was going to take care of it and what the money was going to cost. There was nothing there. There was nobody responsible, and there were no dollars assigned to it. And I'll have to go through and show you that again. My concern is that, as we know, the state is placing tremendous emphasis on parent involvement with these two processes, and I want to make sure that that the district is looking at those. We've always had to have parent involvement at the Title I schools, and in our single site plans, it's usually addressed. And so, I just want to make sure the parents aren't missed in the LCAP. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. Seeing no further comment, Dr. Prater, I think you've heard from us, and I think you understand where to go from here. Do you need more direction than...
I hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we are going to move on to the public hearing and discussion of the proposed 2014-2015 budget, the first reading. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, I'm going to get started, and then Julie Lang is going to come up and kind of finish. So, yeah, as discussed, and as you're going to find out tonight, though you're going to see some slides tonight in terms of looking at revenues and expenditures that are going to show about, you know, I said earlier about $77 million in revenues from this year and about $77 million in terms of expenditures. Well, that's because we have not spent every single penny that we've put in the budget in terms of expenditures. We estimate $3 million, basically, that we'll find in unaudited actuals. But that puts us at a place, again, about $77 million coming in and about $77 million going out, which is much better than the last 2 years of deficits that we saw. During those years of deficits, we saw actually decreases in our property tax revenues. So there were not these, even a 1.5, 1.8 increase. So that's why the past 3 years have been so difficult for the district, for the budget, because you anticipate and you don't know. So it's really a delicate balancing act of not overestimating your... Basically, we kind of underestimate our revenues, and we overestimate our expenditures a lot of time at the beginning of the year. And so one of the things that you're going to hear as I come around after Julie talks to you is us really working at first interim, second interim, of doing a better job of going through especially the expenditure column, and even like the MA dollars today, to where, hey, if we're not receiving those funds, we need to take that out of the revenue side. And again, analyzing, okay, where have we placed money in terms of the expenditure column in first interim? After 2 years of budget reductions, deficit spending, I mean, the board had to make some very difficult cuts to get to a point where I can stand here today in front of you and say that we had a balanced budget this year. Which is a positive thing for us, and that ending balance, the total amount of money that's left at the end of the day, so for us it's about $18,500,000, about that's actually less money than if we it's about 1 year's worth of the difference between our community funded status and what we would receive in LCFF. So that's the difference that we are fortunate, you know, in our district to receive as a community-funded district based on those property tax dollars. One concern that I do have is some of those funds that we look at, again, are one-time funds. So $1.4 million in Common Core funds, you know, some of those things that we have to be cautious of as we look into the future, and make sure that we're taking those into account as we plan, as we look. As I said, the governors may revise. We are not seeing any new funds to the district, so through that document, so it's that's good and bad in that, you know, Julie can actually, we can kind of plan now. We're not, you know, worrying each year kind of where we're going to be, what we're going to do, and so that's a positive thing. I talked about STIRS earlier. That's a game changer for us if that really happens. The same thing is happening with PERS, so we've begun to reflect that in this budget. But the budget that you're seeing before you today does not have the STIRS information in it yet. So those are going to be some increased costs next year, not as dramatic as the $3.5 million, of course. But there will be some bumps, I would assume, that we're going to have to account for as the reality of that comes through with the actual adoption of the budget. So those are things we have to think of. In order to balance this budget, I took some things out of the budget. I took out the, you know, we really need some money replacement vehicles. We need to continue our furniture budget. We need to have a kind of a fund for excess computers and for new computers in the district. That, so I took some of those items out to make sure that the budget balanced, and those will be things that in August, once we do have our final unaudited actuals, once we do have a better idea in terms of revenues, that I'll be coming back to you to hopefully add those back into the budget and make sure that those funds are available. But, you know, as we begin today and making sure that things are balanced or where they need to be, those are items that we had to pull. So this today also, just so that the board knows, normally we would do the kind of the public hearing and vote on the budget right afterwards. But with the new LCAP process, the public hearing for both the LCAP and the budget are separate meetings. So we'll be bringing the actual final budget back to you June 10th, along with the LCAP for a vote, as well as with the LEA plan, I believe. And so all of those things. So today is really just some general information. Julie's going to talk a little bit about some of the different breakdowns of the budget. We're here to answer questions. Any discussion that you have, things that you want to know or learn about, I'd love to talk to you about it. The last thing that I will say is that as you look at the three-year, kind of the three-year overview of the budget, you'll see that we're pulling money out of Fund 20 each year, and we're not putting any money back in. So, again, that's one of those things that has to be addressed. When Julie's done, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about developing kind of a maybe a five-year plan of looking at the budget, both expenditures and revenues, which I think is something that we really need to do, looking at some of these major things, you know, possibly coming down the line with increased expenditures in the future. So, Julie, if you'll come up and start with the general fund aspect.
Ryan, could you explain for the public what Fund 20 is and why it's so important?
Yeah, so Fund 20 is actually our retirement benefit. So we pay for the health insurance benefits, 75%, kind of like we do for our employees, from age 53 to 65 for our classified employees when they retire, or 55 to 65 for our certificated employees. The board has been very, very bright and intelligent for putting money into that fund over the years. Most districts are not in that, you know, have that kind of background or have that fund available to them. So this is kind of an outside fund that is there to help supplement those retiree benefits. The problem is, if we spend it, then we don't have it for those retirees in the future. So it's that balance of finding out where we're at. We're about $9 to $10 million in that account now, which is fantastic. When we did our audit of those funds, which we do periodically every other year, we were supposed to be at about $14 million. So, but again, $9 to $10 million is a great place to be for the district. We just need to make sure that we're cognizant of that, and we continue to put funds back into that account as we take them out as well. We've had great years where we put a lot of money in, and maybe not taken out, and we've had other years where it's...
You can see that our revenue limit increased. That's the 1.5% in property taxes. The federal revenues increased, and that's the MA revenues that we took out of the budget this year, put back in the budget for next year, $300,000. State revenues are down. We're spending down our Common Core funds, so we didn't budget the full $1.4 million next year. We estimated about $750,000 for next year. We also, I had to make notes. It also includes, the difference is because of some of that one-time revenue that we got this year that we weren't expecting, that we won't continue getting. And, of course, our local revenues always start out low because we don't budget for our billings and our donations. We also had some one-time grants this year, though, that we won't be getting again next year. So that showed up in local revenues. So although it will increase throughout the year, I don't know that our local revenues are going to get up to $5.5 million again next year. And on our certificated salaries, this... we had about, well, we budgeted for 10 retirements, and we also had additional positions that offset that. As you know, some of them are in the LCAP, and some of them are just teacher positions that we added. We added the PE teachers and some more specialists and coaches. Something this does not include is some of those carryovers that sites are going to budget and the hourly and the substitute costs, so you can expect to see that go up when they get their carryover amounts. Likewise with the classified salaries. We've budgeted for some new positions in there, but we've also had some retirement savings in there. And we have some new positions in transportation, and we've budgeted for the teach positions, the new teach school positions in there. The benefits include a 7% increase in health and welfare, and the increase between, I think it was 11.442 this year and 11.771 in PERS, so it wasn't a huge increase. But it doesn't include the increase in STIRS for next year, which just came out today, should be going up to 9.5% in 14-15, and it was 8.25% this year. And my calculations say that that's going to be about $340,000 difference in our budget next year. Because we lost some of those grants, our materials and supplies are down, and they're also down because the carryover is not included in there. The operations and other, that's also because of the grants that we've lost, the decrease to that. So overall, we're hoping that our beginning balance in next year will be up to about $18 million, and then our ending balance will be reflected with that difference also. Hope that was clear. On the multi-year projections, you could move forward a slide or two. There we go. I'll try to quickly go through these. We assume that in 15-16, hopefully our property taxes will return to at least 2% increase. So that's budgeted in 15-16, and in 16-17, we actually budget 2.5% increase in property taxes. Our local revenues appear to go down, and that's because we have some one-time money again for next year, the Microsoft voucher money that we won't be continuing to get. In certificated salaries, the reason there's no increase there is because we're assuming 10 retirements in 15-16 and 5 in 16-17. Otherwise, it just includes step and column, and classified salaries only include step and column. Benefits, again, we didn't have the information until today on the STIRS benefits, so those are budgeted at 8.25% for all 3 years. PERS went up, but not as much as it's going to, apparently, so we'll have to increase those estimates as well. So it looks like, really, we're going to remain at about the same level for all 3 years. We're budgeting a little bit less transfers in from Fund 20, assuming that the number of retirees will be decreasing over the years that we'll be paying health and welfare on, at least. And then a couple of the other funds that we're going to be changing is our Fund 14. Because of GASB 54, it's required that we commit funds to that every year in order to keep that fund open. We also have a requirement starting next year that we're going to have our routine restricted maintenance at 3%, which will increase that fund. That's part of the general fund. So the deferred maintenance balance, we're going to move to Fund 40, which can be used for
actions. Looking at our expenditure items, you know, we have things like the EPA funds that have a time limit that run out. And so what's our plan for, you know, when we lose $1.4 million in EPA funds? I mean, those are things that I really think developing kind of a long-range budget, along with doing our yearly check and make sure that we're where we need to be, both revenues and expenditures are important. I think, you know, we are trying to be as transparent as possible as we go out to sites, as we talk about the budget. The aspect of looking at total compensation for employees, I think, is something we're going to have to go to as a district, because if indeed we are paying 19% in STIRS, that is like a huge compensation increase for employees that's coming out of our budget. So that's going to have to be something that you know, we're going to have to make sure people are educated and understand that aspect, I think, as we, you know, we talk about negotiations and move forward. So that said, again, it's an ever-changing thing. I think we started the year last year at like $72 million in terms of revenues. We ended with $77 million. when we started the year with $73 million in expenditures, we ended the year with 80 that it showed. So it will change. You know, Annie Sharp, our transportation supervisor, just found out that she got another 3-bus grant. So those are going to be revenues that are going to be reflected in both our revenues as well as our expenditures. And so, again, as much as we try to break it down and show you exactly kind of where we're at right now, realize that this is a changing document all the time throughout the year. We'll change it first interim. It will change it second interim. We just have to make sure that we communicate that with you and so that you know those changes. And, again, those key, like, ratios of personnel costs, things like that, are kind of key things that we need to really make sure that we keep as kind of our core as we develop our budget.
Okay, we're going to open this for public comment. This is the opportunity for the public to make comments and ask questions. Seeing that no one wishes to do so, we'll bring it back to the board. Are there any questions from the members of the board? Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, Jim. I spent, I came in about 2 weeks ago. I sat down with Ryan and tried to get a head start on understanding the budget, and I appreciate it. And I think I have a good understanding. I also talked to Ryan about my favorite subject, about finding maybe some way to increase revenue, or at least some savings, and that's usually when I look at it in utilities and waste and water and electricity. This year you negotiated with the county on, I can't remember what it's...
City of San Luis in terms of water sewer rates, yeah.
Yeah, and there was about, what, $300,000?
Should be substantial savings, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's probably indicative of what maybe we can do. You also mentioned some other things to me that had already started. And I know that one was recycling was becoming more of a focus at the school sites, so hopefully we can save solid waste management. But there was another one with water.
One of the things we do is, or working on anyways, is going to an irrigation system that's kind of a computerized irrigation system in terms of shut off, turn on through an iPad. We actually have changed one of our grounds positions to kind of focus on that water irrigation, because we spend so much money on water each year and the cost of water. And so we're really looking for somebody who can come in and really help us to keep track and manage that. And so that is, it's a huge focus for us just because of the sheer cost.
Okay. And then I think you mentioned also putting water meters at the fields. Is that?
Well, part of the agreement with the city of San Luis Obispo was the fact of how the water was being allocated. So basically we were being charged for sewer charges on the irrigation on our fields. So by putting two different waters, one for the actual user versus the irrigation, we're able to kind of, you know, not be charged the sewer charge for the irrigation. So we're doing that in ensuring that we have that established at all of our school sites in the city.
Okay, so I guess what I'd like to ask is, if not now, then possibly by first interim, if we could start seeing something that says a dollar saved, and call it out of the budget,
yeah.
as you start down this path.
Okay.
I think that would really help. If nothing else, it would help me. And then the other thing I'd like to see, if at all possible, Chris brought up the MA money, and I think Marilyn brought up the mandates.
Talking about carryovers, where we had, where we didn't spend all our money,
yeah.
And that's what we did earlier this evening, mm-hmm. right? One way I think about this, and I want to make sure that my thinking's correct, I think about that as one-time monies. Is that kind of a fair way of thinking about it? Because we don't really know if we're going to have that from year to year. Is that a way of thinking about it?
Yeah, I think that the key for us is to, and again, that's why that first interim, second interim, and from what, you know, this is my first year of kind of seeing the budget process go through and understanding it, and now kind of going, oh, we should probably, you know, do some things. But what happens is at the end of the year, kind of like with the LEA plan, we put our best guess forward in terms of what sub costs are going to be, what things are going to cost. And so that may not cost that amount necessarily. And so, you know, it is money that, again, if you looked at this graph, we spent $3 million more than we were supposed to. So I think it's the comparison of the actual expenditures with our actual revenues. That's the key at the end of the year. Did we spend the same amount that we took in? And so that is what we have to focus on, you know, as a board, as a group. And so if we know that revenues are going to decrease a year or 2 years from now, we better start thinking about and having a plan for that, because otherwise we go through kind of the pain of layoffs, March, April, May, where we're, you know, the board's having to go through those difficult times. And so I think if there's things that we can do to pre-plan that and kind of lay things out, I think it's important for us in the future.
And the last thing, really, the way I think about it, and it seems to me, is the only thing we know for sure is that if we weren't a community-funded school district, we'd be a revenue, essentially what the old revenue limit school district. Yeah. And is that that's about $2,000 a student or more, actually, isn't it?
It's the 19 million. Right, the difference is about $18, $19 million.
$19 million out of our budget of, what, $77 million. Yeah. So we'd be down to $60 million or so were we to lose our basic aid status. And essentially, again, Mr. Millar and I remember we were essentially a stroke of the pen from the Board of, I guess it was the Board of Equalization, from how they determine whether we're a basic aid school district or not, depending on how Diablo Canyon nuclear mm-hmm. power plant is assessed. Exactly. I mean, by the grace of God, we're here, but the real estate boom. Exactly.
Yeah. So, it's a threat each year.
Yeah.
I mean, even the governor with a swipe of a pen could also make changes to our status, you know, as well. So those are every year. It's something that, you know, we look at and examine and check on. So. School Services is great about giving us the information and lobbying those efforts as well.
Thank you, Ryan, and thank you, Julie. I do have a question myself, and this was on your graphic up there. And Marilyn, you can follow me if that's all right.
Sure.
Okay. When I see revenue over expense there, and then we talk about money falling to the bottom, I get a little confused because mm-hmm. that shows me some deficit spending that is diminishing over the 3-year term there, but I still have a problem understanding the, you know, these are projected yeah. figures, but mm-hmm. the fact that we do have money that we don't spend every year.
Again, it's our best estimate at this time, snapshot. I can tell you right now that we are going to end the year with more than $74,959,000. We are going to have donation funds. We're going to have those three buses that are going to come in terms of revenues. I mean, we're going to get grants from Cuesta or Cal Poly. We're going to get Teach Foundation. I mean, our revenues are going to increase, I guess, is what I'm saying. So, yes, we are kind of in a deficit situation that you'll see, but even with that deficit situation, we still meet the board's required 10% reserves. So based on that 3-year projection, and so that, you know, my concern is that we're pulling $950,000 out of Fund 20 each year to help us get to that point. Well, we can only do that for so many years. So this is kind of right where we're at now. Again, once we have the totality of our unaudited actuals, we come back to you in September, and we're able to then go ahead and, okay, just like we did this year, let's go ahead and allocate some money for Fund 20. Let's allocate some money towards the Wi-Fi project, you know, things like that the board's able to do, to make sure that we maintain that level revenue expenditures.
Thank you. Ms. Roger, are you ready?
So we're down pretty far down the road with fully funding GASB. But did I understand you to say that we're taking $900,000 a year out of that fund?
So see where it says transfers in along those three lines?
Yeah.
That would be the transfer in. That would be out of Fund 20 to help us get to that budget point.
And into the
yes.
general fund.
Yes.
So we're projecting that we will not be increasing the monies in Fund 20 over the next 3 years, but rather depleting it to the tune of close to $3 million?
At this time. Hopefully that will change first interim, kind of like it did this year. So last year when we approved the budget, last year the board approved the budget, we had pulled $1 million out of Fund 20 and had no money going back into it. So it's one of the, again, it's we kind of wait and see where we're at, I would say, in September or October, depending on what that looks like, that situation. Then we just, you know, the board would decide whether or not we put some funds back into that for this year. I do think that, again, this is a three-year snapshot. We maintain our positive certification in terms of the county. I do think it is something that over a five-year look, as we look at the budget, revenues and expenditures, that we have to find a way to put money back into Fund 20.
Yeah, we do. But there are so many things that we want to do.
Absolutely.
For students. There is never enough money, as we all know.
Yeah.
But I have concerns about trying to
absolutely
to replace what we've been forced to use to avoid layoffs.
Yeah.
So okay,
no,
thank you.
There's difficult decisions ahead, because all of those stirs everything go right into those that 85% that we talked about in
yeah.
terms of, you know, salaries, and so that is it will mean people at some point as we move forward.
Well, thank you for this presentation, and thank you and Julie for trying to simplify things so that we can understand it.
Okay, we were going to go to Mr. Millar, then Mr. Buckman.
Mine's
and
quick, too.
And Dr. Eisenrath, Roger.
So if I understood you, what you just said, for the 2013-2014 estimated actuals, that transfer out of $1 million, was
mm-hmm.
that back to Fund 20?
Yes.
Okay. So we can expect at some point before the
2014-15.
Yes, he said, like we did this year, we were able to transfer money back in. And that was what the transfer outline is. So
this year, once we got our unaudited actuals came back, we, you know, basically we had some property tax increases that we didn't necessarily account for when we were doing our budget. We didn't know. We'd gone through 3 years of negatives of property tax. So we got the increase. We had money fall to the bottom line. That was one of the items that we ended up going back and putting money into Fund 20. So for this year, after the 14-15, we have the same amount in Fund 20, and our ending balance is about the same. So that's it's a great place. Now, the issue with that is some of those funds were one time.
Okay.
So that is a concern.
We'll have to find it elsewhere.
At some point, oh, sorry.
I know it's your item. It's your question, period. But I was hearing 3 years, almost $1 million a year coming out.
Quarter to nine.
Of Fund 20.
As of right now, looking at that chart, that would be true.
So if I may follow up, we can anticipate at some point before when we have the unaudited actuals next year,
absolutely,
that some of that money that has fallen to the bottom line this year will be a transfer in, out, thank you, out. That's where I have trouble, the transfer in and out, back to Fund 20 to make up for the transfer out.
That would be a board decision.
Okay.
That would be a board decision. So based on, you know, the things that I listed for you, we need a computer fund, we need furniture fund still, we need vehicle replacement for some of our trucks and things for our employees. You know, those are all going to be items, and then replenishing Fund 20 will be another one. Possibly, and so those will be, I'll bring those forward to you and ask for your approval, and, you know, maybe this is the year we don't fund 20, and we just pull out and we don't do it, so that'll be something the board will have to decide.
I just want to admit that after 14 years, I'm just beginning to understand transfers in and transfers out, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Millar. Mr. Buckman, and then Dr. Eisenrath Rogers.
I've already had a chance.
Okay, Dr. Eisenrath Rogers, then Mr. Buckman.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Pinkerton, I believe I heard you express a desire to have a five-year budget in the future, correct? And I share your desire. It's a little too suspenseful for me to deal with this year. What do you think is the realistic expectation about can we next? Excellent. Thank you.
I'm also looking forward to a five-year budget. Something I haven't accomplished at home, but I think it would be good to do here. So I'm hearing the possibility that there may be money that drops to the bottom. The term that Chris uses is carryover. And so my concern is, or my question is, can we have a process whereby we know either ahead of time or we have a way of placing that money where we've either cut or where we see new priorities within the district? So we have a process for cuts where we talk to parents and teachers, and then that comes through Dr. Prater as his suggestions to us.
And so what I can tell you is that we already have a list of things that we cut out of this budget that we wanted, you know, kind of those things, again, that we had talked about that, you know, we left the music fund in because that was part of the LCAP. That was something we heard, but we took out the furniture. You know, we did a lot of that to accommodate kind of what we heard from parents and teachers and staff. And so I can share those items that we took out as well as looking at things like Fund 20 with you. But having a process of I don't want anybody to think that we're going to have all this extra money in August that we're going to be able to just decide how to spend. There are some key things. I mean, we're supposed to start funding deferred maintenance at 3%. We're at 2.6% now. We took some money out of that fund. Well, it's still the same amount as we had last year, but you know, those are things that we need to build back in come August if things look better than they currently look right now. So I just don't want to, you know what I mean, in terms of there are some things that we probably need to do already.
So it's hard to drive the trucks with three wheels.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, seeing no more lights and no more questions from the board, let's move to the item 10.03, the Facilities Master Plan Review and Potential Facilities Bond Measure.
They got a little more than they thought they were going to get tonight at the board meeting, I think. But PMSM architects are here to kind of walk us through and talk about the facility master plan. And then we're going to talk a little bit about potential facilities bond. Dr. Prater, myself, Mr. Palazzo, Mr. Robinette met with a lot of officials that I'll address as well. So, Kim, if you can pull it up. Shane, you're going to lead this first part. All right. We're going to kind of tag team this.
Good evening. My name is Shane Maples. My associates, Alan Croker and Joel Jennings, are here as well. And so this is a secondary update. Again, you've seen the first one. We'll walk you through a few of the checkpoints we've done and then some of the new updates. So here, kind of in the orange color, you saw what was presented last time. And then in the greenish color is the progress at this point. Under the ed specs, we've finalized the middle school and elementary. Those were sent out last week for any final draft comments from the committee. Pending any of those will be complete finalized. Step four was done last time, and then we've moved on to analyze, assess, and overlay. We've developed some things we'll show in another slide or two here. And then in step six, we're in the final stage of that where we've developed some concept plans at each site. And then as we kind of move into the last step of budget and prioritization, those plans may need some additional, you know, revision or tweaking, but they're essentially complete as well. So
I'm just going to jump. I'm going to jump into. So, again, the ed specifications is kind of a document that was created for if we were going to build an elementary school today, what would it have? If we were going to build a middle school, what would it be? High school, what would it be? So those are ed specs. We had an ed spec committee, teachers, counselors, administrators, all looked it over, you know, vetted the document. Again, that's what Shane said in terms of now they've gotten it, they're making any other comments. We also have a facility oversight committee. So on top of that, we have four kind of community members that come in and are overseeing this entire process. So that's Amy Webster, Eileen Calandro, Bob Kreiser, and Brian Clausen are all part of that group. So we just met last Friday, discussed it as well. So each of these steps, they're part of that oversight as we look forward.
So this again is going back to the previous steps, but this was the needs assessment that was conducted at each site in the district. This is just the Morro Bay High School one for an example look back. What was the condition at each site to kind of guide some of the project tasks and necessary steps throughout the campuses in the district. And then based on the ED specifications, as Mr. Pinkerton was just saying,
in the ED specification document.
So then using that information, the next step, we developed some initial sort of project task goals at each site. This was put into a survey format and then sent out to the schools. So at the high school level, those went out last week as well. This is just a generic snapshot from one of those surveys that kind of gives the user groups the opportunity to look at some potential changes at their site and then prioritize them. And then based on the results of these, we'll be able to kind of better develop the needs at each campus.
So it's, I don't know if it's just me, but I can't read that. So, I mean, I know my eyes are bad, but they're not that bad. But again, basically, this is just a list of, so they took the ED specifications, the ideal school, they took what's currently there at Morro Bay High, and they put them together. And from there, they develop a project list. So what? How can we make Morro Bay High School like the ED specification document? That's the list that they came up with of all the things that they can do. Building a new student services building, renovating classrooms, a pool on campus, a performing arts center, renovating the quad, you know, all of these items that were there. And then what we've done is we've put that list out to the staffs to get their priorities. What are the things that the staff feel that we need to get accomplished, specifically at Morro Bay High School and San Luis Obispo High School at this time?
And so then, based on that, we've generated this sort of draft site concept that essentially with some color coding and, again, the little legend that's unreadable at this scale, basically kind of points to, you know, given an infinite budget and plenty of time, this is all the, you know, great renovations and upgrades you'd see at campus in order to bring it up to that perfect program model. So as we progress further on, the prioritization and budget decisions will come into play, and as far as which ones will be done or put to a later date.
So again, taking that project list, putting it actually on a map. So the red buildings are basically like current classrooms, multi-purpose room. Can you tell the front of Morro Bay High School here at the bottom right? Okay, so as you go into Morro Bay High School, developing kind of a front door, still a student services building, which would, you know, have attendance office, activities office, counseling offices, administrative offices, receptionist, all of those in that space. Pretty much renovating the other classrooms. So, for instance, at Morro Bay High School, they looking at the classroom wings, where you have the hallway in between, maybe encapsulating that entire space in those, having the doors go out into kind of the outdoor walkways and using that as areas. So again, taking all of those ideas and putting them on a map that kind of overlays that is kind of the next step. And so I can, you know, I could walk through every single building, but you get the general idea of what we're talking about. So then
from that, then the next step, as you saw on the progress steps above, is tying that to conceptual budgets at a snapshot in time, the unit cost, the area based on those, you know, in red, what were the square footages for each building, you know, the different topics, so that the district can then tie an actual dollar cost at a point in time so that they can better allocate budget and funds. And then, too, whatever may not get, you know, addressed at this point in time, there's some planning for future funding as well.
And we're going to have that by?
And so then this is actually in progress now. We should have it by? Yes, the 6th of June is the date that we'll have the budget available.
Okay. again, just a copy of the San Luis Obispo High map, some of the same features. Same thing in terms of the list. Again, total budget for each particular item will come up, will be part of it in terms of the planning phase. We did look at two other, I mean, the other schools that kind of came out of the facility master plan is really needs, and that didn't get addressed necessarily in Measure A, were C.L. Smith, the front office area, as well as Bishop's Peak and their front office area. I would say that the other two kind of schools to me that stand out from looking at it would be the classrooms at Pacific Beach High School or something that need to be addressed, as well as the main building at Baywood. The classrooms inside, and talking to Mrs. Dinelli, she would like to see, instead of the open four pod classrooms, that we're able to maybe put some walls up, doors, those types of things, in terms of noise and teacher space. So those are all items that came up, kind of those. So again, we're going to have these for each of the school sites in terms of an overall facility master plan, which would address getting rid of portables at our sites.
Accessible to everyone. And use for reference in the future.
Open for any questions in terms of the facility master plan at this time. Again, we will bring the entire facility master plan to the board for approval June 24th. So, but we wanted to continue to keep the board updated as we progressed.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. It was Sean, is that correct?
Shane.
Yes. Shane, yes, Mr. Smith. Thank you very much. And Mr. Buckman, you have your light on.
Thanks. Just real quickly, and I may have missed it the first time, but I read something in the specs this time about more areas to park on the campus, and I think it was under the San Luis specs. And can you give me some, if that rings a bell, can you give me some more explanation on that?
Yeah, so if we can go back to... So in a couple things, and each site has some unique needs. So for example, at San Luis High, a couple of the potential projects that may come up would be like a new administration, a new performing arts center. You see those in blue on either side of the track facility. So if you're assuming that some of these facilities are going to be built, then we'd also want to address additional parking and drop-off, you know, for that need. And then as part of that, one of the... task that was brought up, or the priorities for this site, was pedestrian and bicycle access. You know, instead of having everyone go through that parking lot, some redesign and some pathways to kind of, you know, guide people to and from the site. Okay. So that is kind of lumped together in a, you know, parking or a paving line item. Yeah.
I was envisioning clusters of parking lots around the campus, and I was going to... No, but okay. Thank you for the explanation.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Pinker.
Okay, so we're good. Thank you.
Thank you.
So just to update the board in terms of the potential bond measures, well, I wanted to kind of give you a rundown. So at the last board meeting, we had shared some survey results, some information about the kind of the public sentiment that we were seeing in terms of going forward with the potential facility bond November 2014. And with that said, we kind of had direction from the board that we needed to go out now and talk to business leaders, talk to community leaders, and kind of get an idea or an insight. And I'm going to have Kim pull up our top themes. So over the past 2 weeks, again, as I said, Dr. Prater, myself, Mr. Plazo, Mr. Robinette, have been meeting with these key constituents and really asking them point blank, you know, what is your opinion about the district going out for a bond measure in 2014, and what are the positives? What are the drawbacks? Are there people, individuals that are going to come out against it? What do you think? And so what we really did was we encapsulated all of those comments that we heard from those, again, community leaders, business leaders, and this is kind of the 10 things that we came up with, big ideas in terms of moving forward. And so you know, number one, I think everybody we talk to loves kids and is pro-student, right? I mean, they want to do what's best for kids. And they really, after looking at the map, seeing what we wanted to do specifically at the two high schools, really felt like going forward would improve the education for our students, as well as it's they're really added value for the communities in terms of and workforce with the program, STEAM. You know, our facilities are really community facilities. So you can go check out the track at San Luis High at night, right, or the tennis courts at Morro Bay or those types of things. So anything that we do to improve our facilities really enhances our community. To a person, everybody we talked to said now is the time. The timing right now, the economy where it's at, people's optimism, you know, who knows what's going to happen in 2016. So over almost everybody we talked to, that was one of the key things that they really said was, man, with those survey results that you're getting, kind of their own beliefs about the community and how the community would feel, that was a key thing that they really pushed for, and they were concerned about waiting. They really felt that as we move forward that we need to be specific. That maybe not in terms of at this point, but as we should the board decide to move in this realm, that we'll really need to open up our schools to the public and let them see what we're talking about and the project list that we're talking about and really be specific about what we're doing, that those were important things. We really need to continue to educate the community by defining the need. So, you know, the survey results without people even seeing the high school were really good. But that said, we need to competing interests. You know, everything from the potential of the Los Osos sewer project to a possible Morro Bay sewer project to Measure Y to Cuesta facility bond. And, again, to a person, they really felt like that voters are able to look at specific measures and decide those measures on their own merit. That they didn't see the competition aspect of it necessarily. And the fact is that as a district, we need to look out for the kids in our district, in our facilities, and that we, you know, based on what the totality of everything that they saw, that we should move forward. Again, everybody we spoke to was in support of us moving forward in terms of November 14. There wasn't a soul that we met with that really didn't feel strongly about the fact that they would support it. They really felt like our teachers and staff need to support this if we go forward. So that's something that, you know, we talked to Dr. Prater about, talking to our unions and our union leadership, because, again, this is something that is going to assist them and help them as well, right? New facilities, new classrooms, new things is going to be good. And so I don't see any issue in getting the support from our staff. And then lastly, the equity issue. So ensuring that, you know, that schools and our district throughout that things are fair, that, again, we're transparent about how money's spent. Now, that's not to say that things won't necessarily be different for Morro Bay and Slo High, because depending on those priorities and asking staff, what Slo High teachers and staff feel as a priority may be different than what Morro Bay High. I mean, Morro Bay High's band, Bryn Bellier and choir, I mean, a performing arts center may be something that jumps to the top of the list at that school site. Right? I mean, so it'll be interesting as that goes and as we look at the different facility needs. But that was one of the things that was addressed, that there's a fair, you know, in terms of dispersing funds and as we fix up our high schools, that people understand that we're going to be fair in doing that. And so those were kind of the top themes that came out of the groups that we talked to. And so I think... you know, in terms of moving forward, I guess what we need from the board is kind of the direction of do I continue down this path at this point? Because the next step would be to bring kind of some draft resolution language on our June 10th meeting. So for you to see what that would look like. Looking at final approval, hopefully, by the board at a June 24th meeting to move forward or not.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. I just want to give the public an opportunity to comment on that. Is there anybody here that would like to comment on the facilities plan? Thank you. That was very informative. You need some direction. And I, for one, support moving forward with this and looking for some possible draft language for the ballot. I think we can say everybody's got a thumbs up. I think it's a thumbs up from everybody, Mr. Pinkerton.
Okay. Can I qualify my thumbs up? Thumbs up, okay. But I really want to see those the numbers that I think you're developing.
That's all going to be, yeah.
Before.
Absolutely.
June 10th. Okay.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. We are prepared to move on to item 10.04, which is the superintendent's evaluation and contract extension. According to the superintendent's contract, each year he has to be evaluated in order to continue his employment and receive a 2% step increase. And I wish to open this with a comment. After reviewing Dr. Prater's self-evaluation, the trustee's survey responses with many positive comments, and a subsequent meeting with the superintendent to review the trustees' questions and concerns, the Board of the Trustees of San Luis Coast Unified School District is proud to announce a positive evaluation of Dr. Prater's performance for 2013-2014. And I'm going to skip all the other verbiage and get to the conclusion. In accordance with Section B of the contract, the board determines that the superintendent's evaluation for the 13-14 school year is positive, and he's entitled to a 2% step increase and to a one-year contract extension from July 1st, 2016 to June 30th, 2017. We need a motion on this, is that correct? And a roll call vote or a public hearing?
So At the last Personnel Commission meeting, we proposed the following budget. The increases are due to staff salary increases, but otherwise the budget remains pretty much the same as it was last year. And so it's brought forward for your approval, and then it will go back to the Personnel Commission at the next meeting.
Okay, is there any public comment on this or any? Okay, no public comment. We'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Unger.
Yeah, I'll move approval of item 10.05, acceptance of the 2014-15 Personnel Commission budget.
I'll second.
And Dr. Eisenrath Rogers seconds. So it's a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Dr. Eisenrath Rogers. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And no abstentions. It carries 7-0. Thank you very much. Okay, we are ready to move on to the declaration of need for fully qualified educators.
That would be me also.
Thank you.
So this is a document that goes forward to the state every year. Our teachers are fully credentialed, but every year when you have emergency needs that come open, you have to tell the commission in advance which areas you think you may be in need of in order to grant credential extensions and emergency, that kind of thing. So this is a document that goes forward to the state to say this is an area that we might need to look at, and so each year we put it forward.
Okay, we're going to open it to a public comment. Is there anyone who wishes to speak to this item? Okay, no one. Back to the board. Any questions? Okay, we need a motion. Dr. Eisenrath Rogers.
Yes, I'll make a motion. Sorry, I left that on accidentally, but I can definitely make the motion. To approve learning how to use a Chromebook here as I'm doing this.
Could we tell you 10.06?
Yeah, 10.06, thank you. Is that what we're talking about?
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
A motion, we need a second. Also, okay. Seconded by Mrs. Sheffer. So the motion is for the approval of the Declaration of Need for Fully Qualified Educators. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We have one absent by Ms. Roger. No, we won't accept proxy votes. Okay, we are now on to the action consent agenda. So if you have any items you want pulled, let me know. So item 11.1, approval of certificate. Okay, 11.1 is pulled. Okay, 11.02, disposition of surplus property. 11.03, acceptance of donations. 11.04, approval of furniture and equipment request. 11.05, approval of purchase orders. 11.06, approval of the California High School exit exam waiver for a student. Pull the last one. Okay, so items 11.01 and 11.06 have been pulled. I need a motion for items 11.02 through 11.05. I will move that items 11.02, 3, 4, and 5 be approved. And a second by Mr. Unger. So Mr. Questenberry made the motion, and a second from Mr. Unger. All in favor? All in favor, Mr. Buckman? Is everybody in favor? It's an aye? It's an aye. Okay. So we have the motion passes 6-1 absence. 6-0 with one absence. Okay. Mr. Unger.
Okay. I need to recuse myself from item 11.01 because my wife is specifically named in this item. If you would give me a moment to step outside, and then if somebody could give me a signal when the item is voted on, I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. So I can open this up also. Well, this is an action consent, so we'll move this on. I don't believe we need public comment on that. We do?
It becomes an action discussion item once you pull it.
Okay. So is there anybody who wishes to comment on this? No. Okay. All right. Is there any other discussion by the board?
Okay. I'll move approval of 11.01.
Second.
Okay. So we have a motion to approve 11.
Aye.
Okay. Okay. Aye. Okay. So the motion passes 5-2 absent. Well, one absence and one abstention. Okay. So, we are done with the action consent agenda. We are now on items for an advanced agenda. And then we'll do the board report. So, items for the advanced agenda.
Say something?
No. Oh, sorry.
You're okay, me, Mr. Buckley.
Okay. I see no items for the advanced agenda. So we are now to board reports.
No, go ahead.
This weekend was the CSBA Delegate Assembly, probably one of the best delegate assemblies we've ever had. And I just want to just report out on a couple of things that were pretty darn amazing. One that I got to be involved with myself, and that was on Thursday. There was a resolution in the State Assembly to honor the 60th anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Education decision. And CSBA was a kind of a co-sponsor of that. Our President Joe Lucy and our Executive Director Vernon Billy were able to be on the Assembly floor when the resolution was passed unanimously. And it was a great honor to be there. I was able to be in the gallery for that. And then on Saturday, for Delegate Assembly, we had a keynote speaker, and we've never done that before. And it was a woman named Dr. Melba Beals. Dr. Beals was one of the Little Rock Nine, and she helped integrate Little Rock High School in 1957. Her story was absolutely amazing and incredibly inspiring. One of the things she talked about was being one of nine black students to integrate
the high school that had no interest in being integrated. I think the story for me that was the most poignant was when she talked about, and help me if I'm wrong, Mr. Buckman, but I believe it was on the second day, the Little Rock Nine was called into the office next to the principal's office after in the middle of class. They were left alone while the adults went out of the room and spoke to each other. She said she called herself a nosy person, so she said she went to the door and listened. And the discussion the adults were having was whether to have one of the Little Rock Nine lynched in order to mollify the mob. She said the sheriff of the community said, absolutely not, this is not going to happen. And the nine were escorted to police cars that were underground and driven away from the high school through a mob that was threatening them. This is a woman who then spent, I think, a year in Little Rock, Arkansas, had a price on her head, $25,000. She was forced to move from Little Rock, was adopted by a family in Santa Rosa, who, when she first moved there, she couldn't stay with them because they didn't want black people in that part of their community. She was able to move to another family probably this would have been 1958. So she actually grew up in Santa Rosa. She's an amazing woman. She was a well-known reporter, and eventually got her PhD in, I believe, interracial relationships or something like that. Taught at Dominican College, and now talks to people about, goes on the road and tells her story. And I think just the last thing I'd like to share is one of our CSBA professional staff was interested in history, and we talked about Plessy versus Ferguson and Brown versus the Board of Education. Plessy versus Ferguson was 58 years before Brown versus the Board of Education, and the role of the NAACP, starting with Plessy versus Ferguson, which was a very well-planned event with a white-looking black man who went on a train for whites only, and how for 58 years everything led to the conclusion of Brown versus the Board of Education. Absolutely amazing to think that it was only 60 years ago. How far we've got.
But not bitter, no hate, just an amazing woman. So on a much more mundane note, I did get to go to the Laguna Open House, and I was absolutely amazed at the number of parents that were there. This is middle school. This is when you send your kid off and say, I've done my job, you take care of them. And it was just great to see the number of people there. And then Rose Fowler and I attended a town hall meeting on alcohol in schools, and I just have to say there was, at least at my table, there was a lot of talk about the influence that Cal Poly has on our students in our district, and it was that was very, very good, a very good meeting. I think that'll do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. I just want to notify more board members that on May 29th, we have a special board meeting. It's a closed session. It's for expulsion hearing. And then our next regular meeting says June. I'm sorry. Oh, Mr. Millar. This is Roger. You're next.
To make a brief comment by Chris's very eloquent recapitulation of that lady's speech as a product of Alabama, and believe me, it's not really thrilled with that part of it, but having grown up and spent much of my youth and a part of my middle school years living in Birmingham during the early 60s, and I've actually seen the apartheid South, I too was was focused on the celebration, the anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education. But what I found most compelling about the discussions around the anniversary was the resegregation of public education. And I think as a district, we have to be on guard against that. I think through inadvertence in the past, we have allowed some of that to happen. I think it's a component, one of the causes of the achievement gap. And I think we should renew our efforts and our focus on making sure that we avoid that in our district as a tribute to this important anniversary. Thank you.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment that I took seriously the comments that were made at the last board meeting regarding counseling and our needs in our district. And after that meeting, I spent the better part of 4 days going to Baywood School, Monarch Grove, Del Mar, C.L. Smith, Hawthorne, and Los Ranchos, meeting with teachers, sitting in classrooms, speaking to administrators, trying to really find out, you know, how people are feeling, how they're dealing, what's going on, what their needs are, what's being met, what isn't being met. And I really wanted to gather my own information so that in reviewing the LCAP, so that I could really be coming from a place of personal knowledge and experience and not just listening. You know, there's a danger in getting all your information from one source. So I have the administrative recommendation, and I then have, you know, people's personal experience and what I observe myself to kind of help me weigh what to do. So I guess I just wanted to say that I took seriously the comments that were made, and I did make every effort to be diligent in trying to get out there and see what's going on. And you know, there are problems. There are problems that didn't exist that I was aware of when I was in school, didn't exist when my children were in school, to the extent that I see them out there today, what teachers are dealing with, what counselors are dealing with, administrators. I'm surprised at the resistance to the MFTIs, because I do think that some people have resistance to the MFTIs because I do think they're providing a valuable service and they are working under supervision, careful supervision, and you know, specifically trained to work with children and young people. That's what they're doing. So I am glad that we are using that service. I think we need all the services that are available to us. It really takes a community. It truly takes a community to serve the needs of students.